I around
got
80.
A sprain or an itch, pain that's swelling or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. COVID-19 is a virus. I'm sure you all know that. The name COVID-19 is generally thought to stand for coronavirus disease, but its initial name, with the same acronym, had a different connotation. The name actually dates to February 11th of this year when the World Health Organization announced an official name for the disease that is causing the 2019 novel coronavirus outbreak. Remember that it was first identified in Wuhan, China.
So, as we said, the letter CO stands for corona, VI for virus, and D for disease. Previously, it was referred to as 2019 novel coronavirus or 2019 NCOV.
Someone actually tried to say that the name COVID stood for Chinese originated viral infectious disease and the number 19 due to that being the 19th virus to come out of China. But that simply is not true. It is often said that viruses live in us but aren't technically alive, since viruses can replicate only inside the cells of their host. In this case, us, humans.
A host can be an animal, plant, bacterium, or fungus. In the case of COVID-19, it has been assumed that the virus first lived in a bat, later in a pangolin, and finally in human. By the way, a pangolin is an anteater.
Remember that viruses are not bacteria. Both are germs, since by definition a germ is a microbe causing disease. Well, that helps a little, but what is a microbe? And that's actually defined as any small, minute organism. So a germ is a minute, very small organism that can cause disease.
Bacteria cause disease and are small, in fact, microscopic. But viruses are much, much smaller. Think of a virus as a tiny package jacketed in a protein covering.
Inside is either DNA or RNA. Each molecule serves basically as an instruction book. Its genetic information provides instructions that tell the cell what to make and when to make it. When a virus infects a cell, it sends that cell a simple message, make more viruses. In effect, the virus hijacks the cell and uses it as a factory to produce more viruses. First, it has to break into the cell to get inside of it.
It makes the cell do its bidding. Eventually, that whole cell dies and spews new viruses to attack more cells. That is how viruses sicken a host.
You know, the body can rid itself of many viruses on its own. In fact, it does this more often than not. If you think you don't have any viruses, think again. It may be hard to fathom, but the human body is occupied by large collections of microorganisms, commonly referred to as our microbiome, that have evolved with us since the early days of man.
Scientists have only recently begun to quantify the microbiome and discovered it is inhabited by at least 38 trillion bacteria.
Did you hear that? 38 trillion bacteria. That's amazing. But wait, there are even more viruses living in the human body, somewhere around 380 trillion viruses. Now that's hard to fathom. Our bodies are literally a breeding ground for viruses. So if you think you don't have viruses, think again.
But these viruses are not the dangerous ones you commonly hear about, like those that cause the flu or the common cold, or more sinister infections like Ebola or dengue, or even the coronavirus.
Many of these viruses infect the bacteria that live inside you. That's right, these viruses, which are known as bacteriophages or phages, attack the bacteria that invade our bodies.
So maybe the research on how we can harness the viruses that are the natural enemies of bacteria will teach us how to prevent and combat bacterial infections.
One might rightly assume that if viruses are the most abundant microbes in the body, they would be the target of the majority of human microbiome studies. But you know something? That assumption would just be horribly wrong. The study of the human virome lags so far behind the study of bacteria that we are only just now uncovering some of the more basic features. Now, this lag is due to having taken scientists much longer to recognize the presence of a human virome and a lack of standardized and even sophisticated tools to decipher what actually is in your virome.
We seem to study microbiomes, but not the virums in our bodies. Researchers have created several medications that fight viruses. They are aptly called antiviral agents, or simply antivirals.
Some of these, for example, block the entry of a virus into a host cell. In this case, it's your cell. Others interrupt the virus as it attempts to copy itself. So why are viruses just so hard to treat? Well, that's because they live inside your cells, which shelter them from medicines. And remember, antibiotics don't generally work on viruses. With viruses, the best defense is a good offense. That's why vaccines are just so important. Vaccines help the body protect itself. Now let's talk about how they work. Sometimes a germ, such as a bacterium or virus, enters your body.
This is basically called an antigen. The body's immune system usually recognizes the antigen as being a foreign invader.
The immune system then produces antibodies to attack the antigen. That fight leaves the body protected, and that is usually true even if the invader infects it again. That long-lasting protection is called immunity. Vaccines provide immunity generally without the risk of an actual infection.
A vaccine might include weakened or killed antigens. Once introduced into the body, these types of antigen cannot cause an infection, but they still can stimulate the body to make antibodies.
Over time, vaccines have reduced the number of infections and deaths linked to many viral infections. For example, vaccines have eliminated smallpox. The same is nearly true for polio, although that disease continues to spread in some countries such as Afghanistan, Nigeria, and Pakistan. Again, remember that not all viruses are bad for us. Some infect harmful bacteria, and these viruses again are called bacteriophages. Now, these bacteriophages can transfer the DNA from one bacteria to another, even if the two bacteria are different species. Researchers can actually use that remarkable ability of viruses to infect cells.
First of all, the researchers alter the viruses to deliver genetic material to a cell. The genetic material it delivers may include instructions to produce a protein the body cannot make on its own.
Now let's diverge just for a second and recapitulate. Viruses may inhabit all surfaces both inside and outside of the body. Everywhere researchers have looked in the human body, viruses have been found. Viruses in the blood? Yep. How about viruses in the skin? Absolutely. Viruses in the lungs, in the urine? Check, check, and so on. And viruses are contagious. But we often don't think about bacterial viruses as being easily shared.
Researchers have shown that just living with someone will lead to rapid sharing of the viruses in your body.
If you don't know what the consequences are of the constant battle between bacteria and viruses in our body, then it gets exponentially more complicated considering the battle between your bacteria and their viruses that are then shared with everyone, including your spouse, your roommate, and even your dog. A question that you may ask is, can viruses keep us healthy?
And the answer is yes, some can. It may seem counterintuitive, but harming our bacteria can be harmful to our health.
For example, when our healthy bacterial communities are disturbed by antibiotic use, other microbial bad guys, also called pathogens, take advantage of that opportunity to invade our body and make us sick. Thus, in a number of human conditions, our healthy bacteria play important roles in preventing pathogen intrusion. So there are good bacteria, and of course, bad bacteria. And the same goes for viruses.
Here is where viruses come in. they have already figured out how to kill bacteria. It's all they live for.
So the race is on to find those viruses in our viromes that have already figured out how to protect us from the bad bacteria while leaving the good bacteria intact. Indeed, there are recent anecdotal examples utilizing phages successfully to treat life-threatening infections from bacteria resistant to most, if not all, antibiotics. This treatment is known as phage therapy. Unfortunately, though, these treatments are and will continue to be hampered by inadequate information on how phages behave in the human body and the unforeseen consequences their introduction may have on the human host. Thus, phage therapy remains heavily regulated.
At the current pace of research, it may be many years before phages are used routinely as anti-infective treatments. But make no mistakes about it, the viruses that have evolved with us for so many years are not only part of our past, but will play a significant role in the future of human health.
You know, interestingly, the HIV chromosome has only 9 genes. But how they work is the difficult part of research. And that's because the genes are so finely tuned, they do a lot of things. It's quite remarkable how much viruses can accomplish with so little information.
The whole genetic information for a virus like HIV would occupy about a page in a printed book, but it's all very intricate. Every single letter, if you like, plays a specific role. Sorting that out is quite a difficult exercise.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. So you might ask, how do viruses mutate? Or better yet, why do they mutate? As the viral genome is being read to create new copies, the wrong letter, the wrong base, the wrong nucleotide is occasionally inserted. Think of them like typographical errors. Try typing a 10-page book and think how many times you made a simple typing error.
With viruses, it really is not all that frequently, from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000 times. With a virus like HIV, it becomes very genetically diverse during infection of an individual. Because HIV can replicate over and over again about once a day in an individual for years.
So a lot of diversity is built up, which gives a virus a lot of flexibility. There are probably some mutations already present in the population in any infected, untreated individual that will make HIV resistant to specific drugs.
That's why if you treat HIV with just a single drug, the treatment always fails after a fairly short time. A vaccine is usually a component of the virus or a form of the virus itself.
For example, in the case of rabies or some of the polio vaccines, it is attenuated, not causing disease, but still able to grow in the body. What it does is it induces a response from the body to make antibodies so that any time the antibodies see that virus again, they kill off the infection before it has a chance to cause disease. Now, an antiviral, on the other hand, is a small molecule, often, for example, just a component of viral DNA or RNA that is slightly altered.
Over long periods of evolution, you have a virus that comes into a host, a species, and spreads. One of three things can then happen. First, the virus can just die out for some reason if everybody gets immune, so the virus can no longer find a host and it dies out.
The second is that the host can die out. The virus can cause a pandemic that kills off a species. Now, that has probably happened many times in evolutionary history, although we don't have very much of a record of it.
The theory is that the virus and host can co-evolve, so the virus doesn't cause enough disease to wipe out the host, but is still able to replicate.
Some viruses that we have around with us, like the common cold virus, they'll cause a mild disease. However, you recover and the virus survives and everybody goes about their business. But when the virus finds itself in a new host, such as a new species, that adaptation hasn't occurred, and it might be very dangerous for that host. That's where the HIV virus comes into play. And the coronavirus, probably similar. Maybe.
It could have come from a bat, and there is a recent interesting paper that suggests that part of the virus may have come from a pangolin, which is scaly mammal eaten for food in some parts of the world.
Now, there are also viruses that just live in us and don't cause any harm. These are called retroviruses, one of many varieties of viruses that live in us that usually don't cause disease, but will occasionally, under certain circumstances, such as if your immune system is damaged.
One example is cytomegalovirus, CMV. Many of us are infected with CMV without consequence. But for people with an HIV infection, CMV can go crazy.
One of the things it does is infect the eye, and it causes something called retinitis. That's inflammation of the retina of your eye, and that destroys the retina. Somebody can have normal vision on Friday and be totally irreversibly blind on Monday. It's a very common thing where treatment for HIV is not available. People go blind suddenly from a virus that they've been carrying around with them for years and years.
Some viruses like HIV has very low environmental stability and are not passed on even by droplets or by the breath.
You know, you really need close, intimate contact, blood transfusions, or sexual contact to pass the disease to another. Now, this coronavirus, by comparison, seems to be relatively stable so that it is able to survive in the environment for hours and maybe a few days. And others are even more stable than that.
Do you know that poliovirus is stable even in sewage? You pick it up by drinking contaminated water. It passes through the gut, through the stomach, which is almost like pure hydrochloric acid. And the virus is still stable in that.
So some are amazingly tough and some are quite fragile. It's easy for an infected person to spread the virus particles through coughing, touching people, leaving the virus on surfaces. And undoubtedly, hand washing after being in public spaces is the key to reduce the spread of COVID-19. But what should we be doing in our homes to eliminate it? Two recent studies have investigated how long coronaviruses survive on different surfaces. You've probably seen this on the media. The research looks at a number of different viruses, including COVID-19. The coronavirus that caused the disease, and it found that the survival time varied according to the type of surface.
The virus survives the longest on stainless steel and plastic for up to 9 days. The shortest survival times of 1 day was for paper and cardboard.
The amount of virus particles during this time does reduce, but it's worrying that the particles can last for days rather than hours or minutes on a surface. So how good are the cleaning products already in your homes at killing the COVID bug? Let's look at a couple of them. First, soap and water. We've all heard that soap and water are your first line of defense to remove the virus from surfaces.
Soap happens to interfere with the fats in the virus shell and lifts the virus from surfaces, and this is then rinsed off by water.
Of course, you also need to wash your hands when you come in from the shop and wash your food as normal. Now let's go to bleach or sodium hypochlorite. It's a very effective chemical at killing the virus.
But you have to make sure that you leave the bleach to work for 10 to 15 minutes. Then give the surface a wipe with a clean cloth. The bleach works by destroying the protein in the virus.
Ethanol, a type of alcohol sometimes called surgical spirit. It has been shown to kill coronaviruses in as little as 30 seconds. Like bleach, the alcohol destroys the protein and RNA that the virus is made up of. So just moisten a cloth with some surgical spirit and rub it over a surface. This will evaporate and you will not need to wipe it off. You may have been using surface wipes. The active ingredient in surface wipes in an antiseptic is usually benzalkonium chloride.
The wipes work by physically removing germs through the pressure you apply when you use them, and the germs then attach to the wipe. They also leave a layer of the antiseptic on the surface that works to kill germs.
The antiseptics work well on bacteria, as well as on coronaviruses that infect mice and dogs. But listen to this. It seems to make no difference to the spread of human coronavirus because antiseptics work by disrupting the fats in pathogen cells. But COVID-19 does not contain many fats. So far, there's no evidence that antiseptics can kill human coronaviruses. Now I'm going to give you a bit of warning about hand sanitizers. The main ingredient in hand sanitizers that'll kill COVID-19 is ethanol, the alcohol, as we said just before, in surgical spirit. The trick is to make sure that the concentration of the ethanol in the hand sanitizer is over 70%. I just went to one of the markets and I looked at one that was being sold and it says 63%. This is not one you want to buy. You're looking for one that is over 70% or it simply will not kill the COVID-19 virus effectively.
Remember that an infected person will produce thousands of tiny droplets that contain the virus every time they cough. COVID-19 can survive in the air for up to 3 hours.
So by opening the window, you can remove and disperse the droplets and reduce the amount of virus in the air, which will reduce the risk of infection for others.
In a new small study, British researchers found paper towels were better than the air dryers often found in public restrooms at getting rid of germs that are still on your hands after you wash them.
We've mentioned that on a myriad of previous programs. Good hand washing practice should be followed by proper hand drying. Now, did you know this? Paper towels can help reduce the spread of microbes and should actually be the preferred method of hand drying. The method used to dry hands can help reduce microbial contamination, not just on hands, but also on the body and the environment outside. Paper towels were found to be more efficient in reducing this contamination.
Proper hand washing means vigorously washing your hand with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. I just saw an Android app that syncs to you while you dry your hands for the 20 seconds.
Now, Dr. Miriam Smith, Chief of Infectious Disease, said that jet drying appears to enhance the potential for aerosolizing and transmitting microbes. And in view of the COVID-19 outbreak, paper towel drying rather than jet drying should be considered in public facilities in an effort to contain the spread of COVID-19.
For this study, 4 volunteers washed their hands after being contaminated with a bacteriophage, a virus that infects bacteria and is harmless to humans.
They dried their hands with either paper towels or an air dryer in a hospital public washroom. All participants wore an apron. After drying, they were asked to cross their arms with apron on, then rest their hands on armchairs.
The researchers then took samples from surfaces they touched, such as the armchairs, doors, stair rails, elevator buttons, chairs, phones, and intercoms.
I hope that this gives you more insight into viruses, and specifically the coronavirus, and imparts more information that is new to you and not on the media day after day.
Here comes the doctor, he comes to see me. Here comes the doctor, he comes to heal me. And I'm to tell him all about my story. I come to tell him all about my pain. This time I suffer from many symptoms. This time I'm coughing with fever high.
Coronavirus is a pandemic that hurts us humans with few meds to try. Waiting on a vaccine, researchers hustle to prevent an increase in deaths this year. They also test new and old medications in hopes of stopping a yearly fear.